Chamishi, the fifth reading in Parshas Chukas. We'll read it independently of Balak. Covers the subject of the passing of Aharon HaKohen and the subsequent fallout. So we're going to take a look at the beginning of Chamishi, and then we'll move ahead into the middle of Chamishi. Perek Chof, chapter 20, verse 22. The Torah says, having completed its narrative of the confrontation with Edom, which resulted in nothing in the end, simply the Jewish people turning away. The Torah says, Vayisu mikodesh. They set forth from a place called Kodesh. Vayavoyu bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel came. Kol ha'eda, the entire congregation, hoir ha'hor, to the mountain of the mountain. That's literally how it translates. So Rashi says, why does it say Kol ha'eda? As if sometimes some of the Jewish people came, and sometimes other segments of the Jewish people came. Wouldn't they all have come, always? So Rashi says, if you say Vayavoyu bnei Yisrael, does it not mean the entirety of the nation? Says Rashi, Kulam Shleim. The emphasis here is that everybody was equally intact. Nobody here was living under the specter of imminent passing or death, meaning that they would not go into the land of Eretz Yisrael. They were Shleimim, they were Ve'emdim Likarnes Laretz. They're all prepared now to enter into the land of Israel. Shalehoyo Bahem Echod Me'esam Shenigzra Gzeira Aleim. There was not one amongst them who was under the sway of the decree that you won't go into the land of Israel. In other words, this tells us now which time we're in. Shekvar kolu meisei midbar, that now we're already in the period of time in which meisei midbar, those who were destined to die in the desert, had all already died. The elu, and now the ones who are in the present narrative, me'oisan shekosav behem, these are the ones that the Torah speaks about and says, Chayim kulchem hayoyim. The Pasuk says, V'atam advekim by Hashem alikechem, you cleave unto Hashem, your God. Chayim kulchem hayoyim. You're all alive today. So these were the live ones. And that's why it says, Vayaveyu b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edo. The emphasis is the entirety of the people. Ibn Ezra says that there's an element of follow-up to the confrontation with Edom. Israel wanted to pass through the land of Edom. What was Edom's response? Nothing doing. And not only said nothing doing, they came fully armed. They said, we'll have a meeting. You're talking about your power, the power of prayer? We have the power of the sword, and we're prepared to live by it. So you would have thought that had a massive army come to the border, they would have snatched somebody. Somebody would have been lost. A stray arrow would have been launched. And therefore the Ibn Ezra says, this is to teach you that although Edom came for battle, they were not playing games. This was not a war game. This was a very, very serious threat. But nonetheless, when Nifked Mehemish, not a single member of the Israelite nation, was lost. Ramban says, this is not about the previous verses, which speaks about the confrontation with Edom. This is about the next verse. What happens at Hor HaHor? What happens? Aaron passes. And when Aaron passes, we're going to read, and Rashi will tell us about this, how his funeral was twice as large as Moshe Rabbeinu's. Everybody came out to this event. So Ramban says, we're getting a sneak preview already, that before we talk about the passing of Aaron, it says, Kol ha'edo, as if to indicate that in the upcoming narrative, we'll have full participation. The Psikta Zutrasa says, for a change, the Jewish people came in one heart and one mind and not seeking pretexts. They weren't looking for trouble this time. Previously they looked for trouble, now they were not looking for trouble. Oh, they're gonna find trouble soon. And there will be issues they weren't looking for. And that's why it's called Eidah, to give you an understanding of their attitude and approach, which was actually appropriate. What's Hor HaHor? So Rashi says Hor HaHor actually describes this mountain summit. Strange mountain summit. It was a har al gabe har, a mountain upon a mountain. So you had a mountain base, a very wide mountain base. And on top of this wide mountain base, there was another mountain summit. So it looked like a mountain on top of another mountain. That's what it looked like. Ketapuach katan, like a small apple, al gabe tapuach gadol, a large apple. Now comes the question, did we not learn that there were clouds of glory that miraculously smoothed the path? Did we not learn that all mountains were flattened so the Jewish people could camp in an equal plateau and they shouldn't have to climb mountains and go in between mountains, should be able to go as they pleased? What's going on with this mountain? So Rashi says, V'afal pishon heluch lefneim umash v'saharim, even though we learned that the clouds of glory go before them to flatten or smooth the ground out. Shalosha nisharu behem. There were three mountains left in the Sinai Desert. And what are those three mountains? Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, and that was La Torah, so the Torah could be given on it. Hord Hahar, this mountain on top of mountain, which was the Kavuda Saharan for the burial of Aaron. Bahar Nevoi, a mountain called Nevo, which was the Kavuda Smaisha. Moshe Rabbeinu himself will be buried there. Now, of course, you may ask the question, there are people who go to the Sinai Desert today. We have a very good approximation of where this is. And there are more than three mountains. There are hundreds of mountains, little mountains. So what does the meaning say? That there are only three mountains that were left behind. The answer is simple. The Jewish people did not live in every square inch of Har Sinai or the Sinai Desert. But anywhere they did go, the mountains were flattened. So all the areas where there are no mountains, we can say safely there's a good chance our ancestors dwelt here. Comes the question then, here they come to Har Ahor. If they come to Har Ahor, how did the mountain remain? So Rashi tells there were three places we came in which we camped, and yet all the mountains did not disappear. But that was for a reason. The mountain served a purpose. But this mountain summit atop a mountain base, this was the place of the passing of Aaron. As the Torah now narrates, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'al Aaron, God says to Moshe and to Aaron, Behor Hahor, on a mountain, atop a mountain, Al Gvul Eretz Edom, on the border of Edom. Why do you have to tell us on Gvul Eretz Edom? Don't we know where we're coming from? And anyway, first in verse 22, it mentions they came to Behor Hahor. Now when God is speaking to Moshe and Aaron, and where is he speaking to them? Behor Hahor. Now we're getting GPS coordinates. This Behor Hahor, where is it? It is on Gvul Eretz Edom. So the obvious question is, if it was important for us to know where Behor Hahor was, why don't you tell us that in verse 22? Why did he wait till verse 23? And what is being conveyed here? So clearly, this may have something to do with the fact that Aaron's passing is going to take place here. So the fact that it's a mountain on top of a mountain is not necessarily meaningful. The fact that Tzadik Goyen maintains that, well, that was the name of the mountain. A mountain called mountain. So it was called Mount Mountain. That's what he says. It's just a place. It's like. So in that case, why are we being told the sudden coordinates? So Rashi says, because what is Hashem going to tell Moshe V'Aaron now? Look in verse 24. Ye'yosef aharon al amov, let Aaron get gathered onto his people. And it's his nation. It's because he will not come to the land. Which I give to the children of Israel. Why won't he come? Like everybody else in his generation didn't come. No. Because of the waters of contention, which we had previously. So it's not Chas V'Shalom because Aaron was unwilling to go to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore was decreed that he shouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael like the rest of the people. Aaron and Moshe were supposed to go to Eretz Yisrael. There was no decree against them. They were always willing to go. So why didn't they go? Oh, that's another story, because it was a secondary event, not the primary thrust. But at any rate, there's the emphasis here on Aaron's passing. And only when there's the emphasis on Aaron's passing, which is conveyed by means of divine speech to Moshe V'Aaron, only when that happens do we get coordinates of Al Gvul Eretz Edom. So Rashi says, yep, Al Gvul Eretz Edom, Magid, which comes to teach us, Shemet Nation is Chabru Kan Lehiskarev Le'Esav Arasha, because they reached out in friendship to Esau. It didn't work, by the way. we try to assimilate, and we got rebuffed. They said, no, you're too Jewish for us. But we tried to reach out. We wanted to curry favor with the nation of Edom. So because of this, nifritzu ma'aseihem, there was some kind of diminishment in their behavior. The Jewish people's behavior was impacted. There was a weakening of our Yiddishkeit. It was a weakness that came about through our desire to be at peace and at one with our Edomite neighbors and cousins. And that was something, because there was this weakening of Torah, this breakage, breakdown of Torah devotion, v'chosru ha-tzadik hazeh. This paved the way for the loss of Aharon, because we know that the loss of a tzadik is indicative of a generation's inappropriateness. We fell short, we lost Aharon. We got too friendly with Edom. People think, it's so nice, multiculturalism, we're going to be one people. We're going to come together with all nations. We make a single unit. And this is going to be a wonderful, beautiful step forward in a peaceful world. Yeah, I don't think so. Not exactly, says the Torah. In fact, even making that attempt already had a negative impact on the Jewish people. And guess what? Because of it, we ended up losing Aharon. V'chein ha-Novi, and so also the Novi. This is Eliezer ben Dido, says openly, Amar li Yehoshaphat, says to Yehoshaphat, is the king of Yehuda, v'yischabercha im Achazyahu, when you became too friendly with Achazyahu. Achazyahu was another Jew. He was the king of Israel, the northern kingdom. Paratz Hashem es ma'asecha. So when you became too friendly with him, Hashem, all of a sudden, diminished or caused a breakdown in your work. And the Torah tells us that there were ships that were lost at sea. And the Navi says that became because of your preliminary assimilation. Because you're reaching out to a Rasha. Because you're reaching out to a Rasha, any kind of connection to a Rasha invariably has some kind of negative impact. I'm going to tell you something that's going to shock your pants off. I'm going to tell you anyway. You should know. There's a guy named Nachman Bialik. He's a famous writer, and everybody quotes him. The fact is that he was a person who learned in Slabodka Yeshiva. He turned his back on Yiddishkeit in a very, very bad way. My great-grandfather, Hashem Yinkerdamov, was in Yeshiva, in Slabodka, with the Baruch Ber Leibovich, the prized disciple of Chaim of Brisk. And Chaim Nachman Bialik came to see his old Rosh Yeshiva, the Baruch Ber. Baruch Ber was considered, you know, was revered by the Talmudim. He came to see him. So I heard from my father, heard from his father, heard from his father. So Mael Tazeh, they came to the Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, Chaim Nachman would like to come in and see you. So the Baruch Ber said, no. So let him come in. So Chaim Nachman Bialik walked in, and the Baruch Ber clenched his eyes shut, and he said, Nachman ker, echob de zeir li. Nachman, I love you very much, but I cannot look at you. Because the Gemara says, asur lehistakel al pnei rasha. And now I look at the face of a wicked person. You want to come to see me, you could see me. But I don't want to look at you. I can't look at you. And he refused to open his eyes. He didn't look at Chaim Nachman Bialik because the Baruch Ber Leibovich considered him to be a Rosh. This is heavy stuff. So the point is that engaging with a person who espouses a rebellion against Torah Mitzvahs is not healthy. It actually could diminish us. And it happened with our. It happened. This is the Jewish people lost Aharon. Why? Because they were too friendly. Because they said, oh, Edomites, come, let's be friends. You'll let us in. We'll be paying you. We'll pay money. And many of the Mefarshim maintained that it was a tragic mistake. That reaching out in friendship to Edom should never have been done. And Rashi tells us this is why we get coordinates.
What should they have done? Like gone to war with Edom? They're not alternative to
them.
Just go around.
Simply go around. She never even asked them for a favor.
Wasn't a favor, they would have paid.
It's a favor.
That's a favor.
Well, they said
it's
no.
It's a business transaction.
They said they, and they said no. We said please, no, please. We learned this yesterday. I said please, can we go through? Adam said, oh no. I don't care if I make money on it. I hate you even more. All right. So that's what the initial. This is the impact of a confrontation, which causes the loss of Aharon HaKohen. Now, what happens when Aharon HaKohen actually passes? So the ensuing psukim speak about when our Aharon HaKohen passes. And our Aharon HaKohen gets how he gets his clothes are taken off and placed, his raiments are placed on his son, and Moshe comforts Aaron and says, how lucky you are, you're passing on, that you're getting to see that your son has your raiments, and so on and so forth, and Aaron passes, and all the Jewish people are mourning and weeping. This mass sadness. And what happens after? And then, if what they broke into the next chapter, which has nothing to do with the next chapter, but it happens to be the beginning of chapter 21, it says, Vayishma Knani, the Canaanite king, the Canaanite heard. Who was the Canaanite? Melech Arad, the king of Arad, Yeshev HaNegev, the Negev dweller. What did he hear? Kibo Yisrael Derech HaSorim, that the Jewish people had come by the way of the Meraglim. Maybe now we're coming up the same way. So, they want to come to Eretz Yisrael. Vayilachem b'Yisrael. They declare war in Israel. Vayish mehem shevi. They were able to get a single captive. So let's take a look in the Rashi on Aleph. Vayish ma'aknani. What did he hear? So Rashi says, Shama shamei saharan. He heard that Aaron died. So, assimilation. Even ever so mild assimilation caused the death of Aaron. What did the death of Aaron cause? The king of Arad heard that Aaron died. And then what, so what happened? So what if Aaron died? Then Istalko Anani Arkovid, and the clouds of glory suddenly dissipated. Like it says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the Amalek. Yep, this is Amalek. He disguises himself as a Kanani. Me'olam Ritzuas Mardus LiYisrael. Amalek is always the whip. Always there to whip us. Never loses a moment. Mizuman b'chol eis l'paranius. Always ready for trouble. Always ready. In other words, that Amalek is like the strap. It's like the strap on the wall. Anytime we misbehave, the teacher points at the strap. This is what happens. We think we'll assimilate, and after we assimilate, and after we become like everybody else, what will happen? Then we'll have a better life. They'll say, oh, you're not so Jewish. Wonderful. Finally, you've come to join the nations. What happens? The worst of the worst comes at the end. Amalek, we get whipped with Amalek. Doesn't mean, I'm not saying the reason how strong, we don't know why Hashem does what he does, but it's a historical fact that cannot be denied, that in the places where there was the greatest assimilation, there was the greatest persecution. It's counterintuitive. In World War II, which country in Europe were Jews most emancipated? Most assimilated?
Germany.
Most into marriage, Germany. And that was the whip. So we see that the Jewish people, always, whenever we get a little bit, a little deviant, Hashem's got a whip for us. And the whip, this is Amalek. Now it's interesting, Rashi says really two things over there. He says, Me'ilam Ritzuas Mardos LiYisrael. We're always the whip, the rebellious whip. And then we say something else. Mizuman B'chaleis L'Paranias. Amalek is always waiting for trouble. Always waiting to exploit our difficulties. We're having a difficult time. Amalek says, now is when I jump in. Now is he exploits the weaknesses. So, I'm going to direct you to the Urim. We're going to conclude with really a fascinating lesson about this business of Amalek and their preparedness always to attack us. Simen Yud Zayin, bottom of page Chavruta. So the Rebbe quotes these two psukim here and brings down both Rashi's that we learned. And the Rebbe suggests the following, that the kefal haloshim b'divrei Rashi, the seeming redundancy in the words of Rashi. First, number one, Rashi says, me'elam ritzuas mardus liyisol. Amalek is always the whip. Always the whip. And number two, mezumen b'chaleis l'paranias, always ready for paranias. Misyaches l'shnei mini'im l'melchamte hamasmedes shalom molik b'vnei Yisrael. This is, speaks of, or to, the two distinct causes of a molik's attack on the nation of Israel. Number one, me'olam. Me'olam means, literally to the world, but forever. Me'olam, forever. Ritzuas mardos l'Yisrael. This is the whip that comes to strike the Jewish people. Meaning, b'goydel sinasei es Amalek liYisrael, in Amalek's insatiable hatred for the Jewish people, who menasa lilachemem tamid. Amalek is always trying to whip us. Amalek doesn't take a day off. Whenever he could possibly harm the Jewish people in any way, shape, or form, Amalek is there. Kol emes shadavim esafshe. They will not lose an opportunity to harm us. Every opportunity they can, they will try to do something to bring about negativity, suffering for the Jewish people. That's number one. Number two, mizuman, prepared b'choleis at any time, l'paranius. What does this mean? Amalek mishtadel l'natzel his damnius. Amalek seeks to utilize opportunities. Shein b'chinas eis l'paranius, where the Jewish people have paved the way for difficulty, paved the way for tzaras. When we pave the way for tzaras, zmanim shel yirid ruchnis, what brings about paranius, what brings about troubles for the Jewish people? When we abandon Hashem, when we forget who we are on a spiritual level, this makes us susceptible to attack. This is a zman of yirid ruchnis, when we're in a state of spiritual decline. So the spiritual decline makes us open to attack. It takes away from us, if you will, the anane akavod, the divine clouds of glory. And that explains what he means here. He said both of these causes can be seen in Amalek's first war with the Jewish people. Amalek, of course, attacked us when we're leaving Mitzrayim and we're heading towards the giving of the Torah. Amalek attacks us now again when we're leaving the desert and heading towards the land of Israel. Every time we try to fulfill our destiny, Amalek is there to attack us. Amalek doesn't want the Jewish people's destiny fulfilled. Amalek doesn't want us to self-actualize. And there's two major moments, at least during the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu, in which we're headed towards fruition, maturation, the development of who we're supposed to be as a nation. One is the receiving of the Torah. And the other is taking up residence in our eternal homeland, Eretz Yisrael. So Amalek, it says the first time, Ba Amalek lehizdavig lehizol koidim l'chol ha'umis. Amalek is the nation that we reserve special enmity for, because Amalek is the nation that said, the Jewish people are leaving Egypt and everybody's terrified of them. I'll show you, they're not so frightening. They're not unstoppable. And this is Mirev Sinosili Yisrael, because of his incredible hatred to the Jewish people. Hayahu harishen lehilachem bem. Amalek was the first one. And Amalek got burned. And Amalek suffered. But in the meantime, Amalek pulled off the proverbial hot bath by jumping in and burning himself. But his self-scalding, in the end, made us less invincible. It took the shine off our armor. And that came purely out of hatred. Then, when did Amalek come? Amalek came after we were quarreling with Hashem. After quarrel. And God said, you keep asking, am I here? You keep asking, am I going to protect you? Now you'll see. As the famous metaphor that Rashi brings in the way back in the beginning of Exodus. Al-Riv b'nei Yisrael va'al-nasayisim es Hashem. That what did Amalek attack for? Because we quarreled with Hashem. Because we tested Hashem. Because we said, Hayesh Hashem bikirbeinu. Is God amongst us? Or maybe not. In other words, Amalek smelled blood. He smelled a decline in our spirituality. And when Amalek smelled this decline, Amalek knew, now I can come in and attack. Intuitively, Amalek knew this. Intuitively, Amalek knew that as long as our Yiddishkeit is strong, we will be strong. As long as we were weakened from within, Amalek knew there was an attack that was ready to be successful. But Hu Hadin, the same thing happens now, as Amalek attacks us, preparing as we are towards the self-actualization of coming into the land of Israel. Af hi nova mishnei miniyim elu. It came from two things. What did it come from? There were two events that are taking place here, even though they're not mutually exclusive. Number one is the passing of Aaron. Shama shamei sadu. Because it says, Vayishma knani. Mashama, what did he hear? What did he hear? He heard that Aaron died. And when Aaron died, so he heard, Nistach v'nanei akovet, the divine protection has now been diminished. They're not invincible anymore. But what else did he hear? He heard about what precipitated this. What precipitated it?
Was it cohesion?
Our not lack of cohesion, but our inappropriate cohesion. Our seeking friendship and closeness with Edom. And when we saw friendship and closeness, Nischabru kan, Lehiskarev le'Esav, they tried to rekindle something with Esav. And that's when Nifritzu Maaseim, there was a decline. there was a decline. The fact that we even came close to Esav meant that something declined. There was some kind of impact on a spiritual level. A matzav of Yirid Ruchnis. And when there was a moment of Yirid Ruchnis, Amalek said, now. Now. When they're weak spiritually, now they can be attacked. And so we see that the same thing happens in the first attack of Amalek, and the same thing happens in the second attack of Amalek. And what can we all learn from the story, the narrative of the passing of a desert high priest? What can we learn from the story of Amalek's attack? We can learn that we have enemies who hate us, and they'll always be a Marzuas Mardus. But we have to also realize and recognize that intuitively, subconsciously even, they know when we are weaker in our Yiddishkeit, and we make ourselves susceptible to attack. And that the stronger we are from within, and the way we're strong, our robustness comes from spiritual health. When we are in a spiritual healthy state, we're spiritually robust, and that provides us with the strength and the inner unity to be able to overcome our enemies, and they smell it, and they know it. So it was then, and so, my dear friends, it is now a day.